Hi everyone, welcome to the Screen Strong Families podcast, bringing you the best solutions for parents who are serious about finally eliminating screen problems in their home. This is Andrew Hempe.
And this is Evan Hempe.
And this is Olivia Kernikan, producer for this podcast. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. And if you're new, we're so happy you found Screen Strong. And today we have something very special planned for you. Andrew and Evan are going to be sharing 48 benefits of going 48 months, aka 4 years of high school, being Screen Strong. And what this means over here at Screen Strong is they went through high school with no smartphones, no social media, and no video games of their own the entire time. So, boys, by the time this airs, both of you will be starting college. So we wanted to get you on the show to share while everything's still fresh in your mind. So are y'all packed? Are you ready? Are you excited for college?
No, not packed, but excited. Yes.
Okay, good. Evan, what about you?
We're packed and ready to go.
Okay.
Already packed.
Fantastic. Okay. So what I've done is I've organized these benefits into like four categories. So we're going to start with the physical benefits of being Screen Strong. So can you go through how not having like the distraction of excessive screen use, smartphones, things like that contribute to your physical lives, like with sports and things like that?
Yeah. So without having, you know, the distractions on the screen and whatnot, forces you to get out and get into other things and spend your time and your effort and, you know, your energy, and forces you to break a sweat, which is honestly, you get so much more out of breaking a sweat and just being outside and playing sports with friends than sitting inside and, you know, scrolling for a couple hours. You get nothing out of that. Growing up, or especially even, you know, even in high school, the downtime spent playing in the backyard, just being outside, just getting your hands dirty. There's something about that, just whether it's, you know, just building a fire, which is, you know, a useful skill, getting your hands dirty, digging worms to fish, going outside, playing catch, whatnot. You know, just being outside, just being in the elements it's just good for you. It weathers you. And, it just makes you, you know, it's as we're designed, to be outside and to just be breaking a sweat like that. And, more specifically, you know, just, in sports, one of the things I did is I know that I poured myself into was I would go out. We had a net in the backyard and a tee, and I had a bucket of balls and a bat, and I would just go out there by myself, and I would just, you know, just hit for a couple hours. And it was good for me to, you know, just get out there. Not only was I getting better, my swing was, you know, improving. I was breaking a sweat. I was getting outside, but I was also, it was nice. I could think, I could be outside. Mm-hmm. I could, you know, just take in what was all around me. And so that was definitely a huge physical benefit that I had instead of staying inside and playing video games.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that I remember we spent countless hours doing was just playing basketball. We had hoop at our house, and we would just, in middle school, it was every day after school, we would come home, we'd play one-on-one. That was one of the huge benefits, of course, of having a twin brother for all the competitive aspects. But yeah, just shooting hoops was a great way to, you know, get exercise, kill some time. And also then, you know, prepare yourself well to demonstrate your skills, whether it's for a middle school or high school team, or even on the church league basketball court. I know Evan and I both enjoyed that a ton. That's one of our fondest memories of high school, was playing basketball with a bunch of guys just goofing around playing in church leagues. That was a lot of fun. Definitely a physical benefit, being able to invest that time. And basketball is just another example. And basketball is an example of a sport we played outside of school. We played that in a church league. But both of us ran cross country for our school as well, which is another physical benefit, of course. We ran cross country. We kind of started it in middle school. We couldn't have guessed that we would end up running for 7 straight years as we did throughout middle school and high school. But we just kind of started doing it because some of our friends were doing it in 6th grade. And then we stuck with it. And that was another huge, just super fun experience that we couldn't have foreseen and probably wouldn't have even picked up if we'd been spending all of our after school hours, you know, gaming or on screens otherwise. And yeah, and we'd get up in the summer, go to our 7 a.m. summer workouts, doing practice every day after school, just feeling really good about yourself by being in good shape. And yeah, just another really good example of investing your time in something that physically benefits you, unlike screens. So.
How was it in middle school having to get up that early? How were y'all able to do that? Because I don't think that is usually something that most young kids are able to wrap their head around. You know, they want to sleep and things like that. So did you find that difficult, or were you just like so excited to go to practice that it was easy?
I can't say that we were excited every day. It was kind of one of those things where when you wake up, you kind of are still asleep in the car and you're still kind of asleep when you're walking into practice. But
yeah.
I just remember, even if it was a really hard practice or anything like that, I would always just feel so good about myself walking out. It's kind of like before and during, it would kind of be miserable. But then after, you feel so good about yourself. You got those endorphins flowing. You got a great start to your day. So yeah, thankfully, mom and dad were willing to put up with our pretty strong resistance to waking up that early.
Yeah.
But they made us do it. And I think we're a lot better for it.
At least when the endorphins hit halfway through practice when you were finally awake, it got
exactly. Yeah. By the time we were awake, we'd already been flooded with endorphins.
So nice. Fantastic. Evan, what about you? Anything else?
Kind of along those lines where he said that, you know, when you spend time doing something that, you know, maybe isn't so easy, that kind of develops that grit, you learn kind of the value of time and, you know, how can I be spending my time getting something out of it, as opposed to, you know, just being on a screen where you don't get anything out of it. I mean, you could sit there and scroll for, you know, 2 hours and maybe you know a little bit more of what's going on in somebody's fake life. But I mean, if that's your thing, then, you know, that's kind of sad.
That's where the road ends.
Yeah, exactly. But if you spend your time, you know, getting outside, doing things that aren't easy at first, nothing in life that I haven't lived a ton of it or gotten really out there yet, but you know, nothing good is ever easy. And so being able to discipline yourself and learn kind of how to manage your time and not have to rely on the screen at kind of as a crutch,
right?
To, you know, just, oh well, I don't know what to do with this time, so I'm gonna, you know, spend it on the screen. You learn how time is valuable and you want to get the most out of this. So you get out, you run, you get out, you hit, you go out and you play basketball and you sweat and you bond with other people. And so, yeah, that was just kind of going off the that grid idea. And then, you know, another benefit was maybe not in the summers of cross country, but you get more sleep, you know, if you, without social media and phones and whatnot. Because if you have, you know, that phone, that screen in your room, they're designed to captivate you and to, you know, you don't want to look away, and it's natural. It's a normal thing. It's
designed that way. Yeah.
Entertainment as humans. So if you cut that out of your life, you find that, you know, when you lay down, when you put your head on that pillow, you're going right to sleep and you wake up with a full 8 hours and you can wake up decently early with still really solid sleep. And that just sets you up for success in that day. Nothing's worse than when you can't sleep or you go to bed late and then you have to wake up semi early and you're not there physically, mentally, emotionally. It's not you. And so being able to not have that temptation of a screen when interfering with your sleep is huge. You get more sleep, you feel more healthy, and you're just ready to go for the next thing. So yeah,
not only are you your screen time isn't cutting into your sleep, right? That's one benefit. But then another benefit that you might not even realize is that because you're not on your screen, but you're doing other things outside, that makes you tired. So then not only are your screens not keeping you up, but not being on your screens is also helping you go to sleep because you're, you know, tired. And that was always, that's always a good feeling when you get in bed at night and you're genuinely tired because you've had such a productive and even physically strenuous day, and you feel like you accomplished something and you've earned that sleep instead of kind of just, you know, piddling away the time, scrolling mindlessly. So, yeah, that was a really good point, Evan. Yeah. And then another physical benefit, of course, is that goes along with kind of these sports and things like that is spending time working out, kind of getting into personal fitness, and whether that's through the weight room or through those other sports, but kind of helping your physical fitness to become almost a hobby of sorts, where you purposefully incorporate that into your day, Because you know, you want that, you want to feel good after the workout and you want to kind of improve yourself. That's something that I felt I've definitely kind of benefited from that. I was able to take a weight room class in school and that always helped me feel good, not only because I was getting exercise during school, but I found that not only was I getting stronger, but it was also helping the classes I would have in school, because I would go to class after weight room and I might be a little sweaty, but I would be so mentally engaged in that next class because I had gotten my blood flowing and all those things. Working out in school, outside of school, definitely something that having your screen having screens not being a huge, you know, chunk of time that you're kind of, I don't know, it's being hemorrhaging out of your day. You're just losing time left and right when you have that screen. But when you have that, when you reclaim that time, you can invest it in things like working out. So, that's something that I know I enjoyed. And then one thing that I think might be kind of underrated that a lot of people, especially our age, teenagers and middle school, high school age kids, don't really appreciate is kind of the benefit of having real downtime. A lot of people now with screens, anytime, you know, you'll be out at a meal with friends and there's a lull in the conversation and immediately everyone just pulls out their phone. Mm-hmm. And that just demonstrates the extreme to which it's been taken in today's culture. But no one really knows how to use and really benefit from downtime now. Because there's certainly times, even as busy of a life as Evan and I led throughout high school, where we would have downtime and we would maybe baseball practice got rained out one day and we'd go home straight after school and that felt kind of weird. But then we would also have that downtime to be creative with, to invest it in something, to find a way to entertain yourself and still, you know, benefit from the day without just relying constantly on that sort of that screen crutch that everyone loves to go straight to anytime there's an empty moment. So
people hate silence.
Exactly. Yeah.
Silence can't exist anymore. Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, that going back to the dinner table thing, no one knows how to have a real conversation or to keep a conversation mm-hmm. going. It's always, that was the one topic that we had. So I guess we'll just scroll now for the rest of the meal and hope it ends soon so I can go home and scroll more. Like that's a lot of times what is people's course of action these days.
Yeah. And it's good. You know, downtime is it's not as valued today as it used to be. And, you know, getting creative with your downtime is you might as well be doing something while you're doing nothing. So, you know, start doing chores. I feel like helped me and just, I don't know, obtain a little bit of this grit is, you know, mom and dad would put me to work. They'd, you know, when you're growing up, you might as well pay off now. So
be useful.
Yeah, be useful. Stop, you know, being lazy loafing around. Go do something. Go pull weeds when it's hot outside. Go mow the lawn. Go, you know, clean the deck. I don't know, clean your room. Just and while, you know, that doesn't sound like super exciting work, man, when you look back on, heck yeah, I cut that lawn, or mm-hmm. heck yeah, I cleaned my room, you know, it helps you take control over things in your life that, and then it feels, you know, it feels good. Like, hey, I was helpful today in the effort of, you know, keeping a clean house. And, you know, you might not always want to do that. You know, it's not everyone's first thing is like, man, I really want to, you know, go back in my room. I get so much vigor out of that. You know, no one's thinking that, but you know, it's goes back to the, not everything good is easy. And so, when you do that and you feel useful and helpful, it's a good feeling. And when somebody comes in and says, wow, Evan, your room looks really good, you're like, yeah, mm-hmm. I know, because, you know, I cleaned it well. So it's a good feeling to do those chores.
There are so many things on the screen that, you know, it's such an intangible world. Like everything is virtual. There's nothing, like people can have accomplishments on it, but they're not real. And so to have something like doing chores, like you said, mowing the lawn, and you can literally look back with your eyes and say, look mm-hmm. what I just spent the last 45 minutes doing. Yeah. And there's something really important about that in building grit and making you feel accomplished and like, wow, I actually put my time to good use. So that's a great point. Yeah.
And that's super gratifying. Like yard work is underrated and just how gratifying it is. Like there's not that many things out there where you can see the fruits of your labor so immediately. Like it's cool. And that's one of those things where you're like, oh, what are these kids talking about? Like doing yard work is fun, but it's like, right. It's kind of like, it's almost like working out, but even better in some sense, because working out you're going towards a long-term goal, but you still feel good in the moment.
Right.
With those chores and yard work and stuff. I mean, the long-term goal is kind of realized after however the many hours you spend doing it. Well, exactly. Now the lawn looks good and those weeds are gone and the house looks this much better and my room is clean and I can actually walk on the carpet now and those things. So that's definitely gratifying. Kind of goes back to that feeling good when you lie down at night, that type of idea. Yeah. And another cool kind of fun outdoor activity that Evan and I enjoyed and used as a side hobby to fill some of our non-screen time was, we of course loved going on bike rides. I still fondly remember we would go on a Saturday, me, Evan, and our dad and our sister, we'd ride our bikes to a nearby Target and we'd get ices and then we'd ride back. And that was like the highlight of the week. That was so much fun. And then later on, we learned how to ride longboards, like kind of like skateboarding with a lot of our friends. That was really fun. Kind of a whole new thing, but still know how to do it. And it's still a lot of fun. So that was another thing that was really fun. Yeah. And just kind of to summarize all of these physical benefits, you know, getting outside, getting exercise, doing all these things, they make you feel so much better and they make you genuinely healthier as well. Those are both things that gaming all day and scrolling through social media all day really won't do. You might feel good after, you know, whatever, you win a video game or you see that you got 100 likes on a post or something, but then, you know, 10 seconds later, it's gone and you don't feel gratified about that at all. And then you don't sleep because you're just desperately wanting more all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of just to contrast the benefits of doing these physical type things, investing your time in those as opposed to letting it all go down the drain of those screens. So
that was great. Thank you all so much for sharing that. And it's funny when you start, I mean, we just did the physical benefits and think of how long we've already been talking of just like the physical benefits of being without the screen. So it's a lot when you break it down for sure. But then how do mental benefits come into that? You know, like when we're talking about mental benefits, we're really talking about cognitive benefits, how you're thinking, focus, reading, motivation, studying, things like that. What are some ideas that you have around those kind of mental benefits?
At least for me, I found not having the distraction of those screens, that really enabled me to focus a lot better. Like a lot of my classmates at school they'd come to class and they'd say, oh my gosh, that homework took me forever or whatever. Or they're always complaining about having too much homework in general. Whereas I was a slow worker, but I would still be able to get things done because I was able to focus. And I wasn't constantly having my attention span interrupted by a notification every 15 seconds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of being able to actually focus and accomplish things for extended periods of time, that definitely helped me. That definitely helped me out, and it made homework much more manageable, especially in high school. And then, another kind of pastime that's really great that you even mentioned, Olivia, just a second ago, is reading. Like reading is one of those things where you just feel intelligent after you read, like, and it's so mentally engaging. It trains your brain to be more empathetic because you're imagining yourself in the shoes of the character that you're reading about. It improves your vocabulary. There's so many benefits, and I don't know, reading is just like fun. And I don't, to be honest, I don't spend as much time doing it as I would like because I'm pretty busy, but you know, on beach trips or anytime I've really got a big chunk of free time, it's always really fun to just enjoy a good old fashioned book. So that's definitely And the cognitive benefits there are almost limitless. It's just so good for your brain.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Reading and interacting with texts and just literature just throughout, you know, history or what's written now.
Physical
just,
texts. Yeah.
Yeah. Is super beneficial to interact with all the content and the words and just, you know, get smart through those books. You learn so much. And, you know, one of those things that you can learn is more confidence in, I guess, rhetoric would be the word, like speaking, writing, reading, which is, you know, it's a lot more uncommon now. If you can put together a good email, they're like, wow, like that's impressive, because a lot of people can't do that. But you learn kind of how to do that and learn what words to use and how to be polite and how to talk by reading and skills like that. So one of those things is public speaking. You got to know what words to use. You got to read speeches from the past that worked, that were effective. And, you know, you don't have to say the same thing, but you have to see the speech structure and just learn how to get up there too. We competed in a spelling bee in middle school. Of course, I came in freaking second place like every year to the other guy on this line. But
it's okay. There's only one gold medal.
It taught me how to lose, and it taught me how to get up in front of people and spell words. And Andrew and I got pretty good at that because we grew up reading, and we were just interacting with words, and we could, you know, see it. And, you know, reading helped then improve our public speaking skills, which not everyone had. So that was kind of cool.
No, that's great.
Yeah, a lot of those kind of language communication skills are really, you know, invaluable. They really set you up great. And it's kind of ironic when you think about, I'm communicating when I'm DMing my friends or snapping them. Right. But it's like, it's all very, I don't know, it's like stripped back English, and it's hardly even English. It's like high efficiency, low on clarity, and low is like zero depth. It's kind of ironic when you think about how much we communicate with people now, but how bad we are getting at communicating. So kind of all these things are being able to effectively communicate that benefits you yourself. And that's something that will definitely help you out in a career, because everyone's got to know how to do that. And yeah, another thing that will help you out in a career and is also a mental benefit of not spending every waking moment of our lives on screens was that Evan and I developed really solid planning skills. We were constantly juggling lots of different activities, going from music lessons to orchestra rehearsals to sports practices, you know, with school in the mix, you know, juggling family engagements and all these things, you know, all these activities we had floating around, kind of being able to plan that out and structure your day and be, you know, be purposeful with all of your days. That personal planning is definitely an acquired skill that we benefited from. I can't say, you know, maybe if I had a calendar app that would have helped. I don't think it would. I think
then you have to remember to look at the calendar app.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's not even a given. But yeah, even having a paper calendar, that's fun. You know, Evan is getting a huge one, like a wall mount paper calendar, so we can plan out like your entire life in college and stuff.
That's awesome.
But yeah, those personal planning skills are very valuable. Yeah. And kind of in the same vein as reading from earlier, we talked about kind of leisurely reading for fun, but I benefited immensely from reading textbooks. I was never a big fan of online textbooks or reading online materials, but I would, you know, I remember this past year, I had a European history class that there was so much content, but I guess it's because I'm a super nerd, but reading the textbook was super beneficial to me. And that was how I would learn. That was how I would study. Reading the physical textbook was great, and that helped me learn things better. That helped me remember what I was learning. And, you know, I felt good about myself because I felt like I was getting smarter. So that was a benefit of using physical textbooks as opposed to, you know, even those educational digital platforms. So
What about like hobbies and things for you guys? Because I know that some people could think of hobbies as like a physical benefit, but I would definitely put them in the mental benefit, because kind of like what you were talking about, Andrew, of like planning skills and structuring and kind of developing those executive functioning skills is really what we're talking about with the mental benefits. So Evan, like, do you have any examples of like non-tech activities or hobbies or things that you can kind of lead us into that might be a benefit, you know, that you can experience while not having access to the screen?
Yeah. One thing that was definitely a big part of our life growing up, and that Andrew and I occasionally get back into is baseball cards or football cards or basketball cards, and having those physical pieces of cardboard with information on the back that, you know, we would learn about the players. And I guess I was blessed with a good memory as a kid, but one of my talents when I was like 9 is I memorized all my football cards like in order and stuff, and where these guys went to college. So my teacher would quiz me, not on math, but she would take my binder and she would say, hey, where did this guy go to college? And I would be able to tell her and what, you know, and like what college and what year. So having that physical card and having that hobby of collecting and, you know, studying these cards for, and I didn't have to, it was just, it, I wanted to, it was for fun. It was, that information just interested me, and that hobby just, it was awesome. And it still is. And getting back into it and following sports and following players and stuff is really cool. So having, you know, that time away from the screen, I don't know if I would have gotten into that.
Right.
If I was on the screen. So being able to, you know, expand your memory. I mean, there are people that don't have, you know, incredible memories that could, you know, they'll tell you, you know, whose stats were what. You're not going to get a good memory unless you practice, unless you try, like anything, to memorize all that. So definitely that hobby particular helped.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just like a side effect almost of one hobby. And like, Evan, if we tried to count the hobbies we had growing up, like
a lot of phases,
we had so many of them. First of all, we probably wouldn't remember them all, but there was so many, so many phases and things like that. And yeah, sports cards is just one example. And like for all of these, they all have benefits like that. These non-tech hobbies that we really had fun with. And one that we're still really enjoying and is incredibly beneficial and practical is our love for music, for listening to music, for making music, playing instruments, all these things. We both have played the violin since like very young age, like before lower school, four or something crazy. We both have been playing the piano for a long time as well. Evan like taught himself how to play the guitar like while we were in the middle of the 2020 stuff going on.
Yeah.
Like Evan was just like, oh, I guess I'll just teach myself to play the guitar. Like, okay. And he kind of did the same with the piano. But yeah, those are skills that are very enriching, and those are things that we can share. And like people will come over to our house and Evan, they'll like be humming a song, and then Evan will just like play it on the piano and they'll be like, wow, that's like kind of unbelievable. I can't believe you can do that. And I'd like, admittedly, like a lot of that is a God-given gift that like Evan can do that. But also it just comes down to the time he spent like honing those skills. And yeah, so music is a hugely beneficial, really, really fun, you know, mental benefit. It's a social activity. Like it, you know, crosses over into so many different areas of our lives. That's really fun. And kind of going hand in hand, kind of the ugly side of music is the discipline and grit that it takes to get good at something. Like there are so many violin lessons where Evan and I would be crying in the car on the way over, or we would pitch a fit because we didn't want to practice at home. But that discipline and grit really does, it helps build so much character. It just trains you for life, because those having discipline and grit, those are things you're going to need to rely on throughout your life when the going gets tough, all those things. That's kind of, those are things that set people apart from the crowd. And yeah, music is definitely something that trained us on those life skills. So
I
can definitely point to music as being beneficial in those areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like one thing today is that people, I think, get a little wigged out over is, I'm not great at this, so I'm not going to keep doing this. And that's just such a bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Or I'm not going to go pro. I'm not going to become a professional musician or an MLB baseball player. So I'll quit right now.
What's the point?
It's terrible, because, you know, nobody is born with the ability to whatever, go play the piano super well. You might have some things, like you might be born with, you know, musical, I don't know, talents, but you have to act on those. You have to put your hands on the piano. You have to start at ground zero and you have to work your way up. That's how everyone does it. It takes a lot of hard work. Yep. And people just get in the early phases, like whether their kids are playing instruments. Like I talked to so many people, it's like, oh yeah, I played violin, I played piano, I played guitar, but then I just quit. It's like, because why? Well, because I wasn't really good at it, and like I didn't really have time. Well, I didn't have time is crap. That's not true. Mm-hmm. And I'm not very good at is sad, because no one's good when they first start. So one of the things that Andrew and I did is when we grew up is we started taking art lessons. We would do clay, and you know, there were a lot of really hideous pieces of crap that we brought home.
Abstract art.
But it's, yeah, abstract art and whatnot. But, you know, it's like we stuck with it and, you know, we kept doing it for years. And then, you know, when high school rolled around, it was like, oh, wait, I actually kind of, these skills, I learned how to do it. That's actually something somebody wants to put on their mantelpiece and not in mom and dad's closet to collect dust. But that was sweet. You know what I'm saying? But like, you have to start somewhere. So one of the, it's just really sad when people quit things because they're not good.
Skills like that will never be like, they'll never hold you back. They'll only open other doors for you. Like knowing how to play the violin doesn't make me a worse person at all. Like there are zero drawbacks to these skills. And so when you think about like trading out your screen time for doing things like this, it's just like, it's almost a no-brainer. It is a no-brainer. It just takes the willingness to step back from something that's comfortable and easy. And it takes the willingness to, you know, step into something that's genuinely difficult and takes time. Yeah. And something that, you know, experimenting with new things is something that is really kind of essential to picking up those skills, experimenting with a musical instrument. Or speaking of experimenting, one way I enjoy experimenting is just by like kind of tinkering with things around the house. So although I am going into college as a mechanical engineering major, I could not tell you the first thing about a car other than how to make it go forward. So I am fascinated by the way things work. And so one way I've kind of employed that fascination is like trying to fix things around the house, whether that's, oh, this part is broken in our dryer. So, let's take the front off. And before we pay a repairman $300 to come out, let's take a crack at it. You're not going to break it any worse, hopefully, but why not? You know, I'll take a crack at it. And oh, well, it's just the simple fix. Let's just get the Phillips head screwdriver and change this part out. And before you know it, you've learned a skill. You've learned how to fix something and you've saved a lot of money doing it too. So that's something that, you know, learning how to tinker and things like that can be really useful. Whereas learning how to fix something in a video game is not a very practical skill, I must say. So yeah, that's something that not only have I benefited from personally, but honestly, saving money is pretty cool too. So that's also a fun little perk for the family.
It is for sure. And like hearing you all talk about, you know, the 12 things in this section, the theme that we're coming out with is really like critical thinking skills, you know, an increase in your focus, planning, being able to public speak, this like idea of discipline and grit and all of these things. First of all, you're going to be so overly prepared for college. You won't even know what to do with yourself because you've had this foundation of like having to juggle all these things. I have a feeling college is going to seem easy to y'all because you're not, you know, you've just been juggling so much and now you're moving forward into this new space. But it's also like you have that foundation for any new thing that you come across, be it a class or an activity or even like a difficult situation that you have to handle. And that's really like a theme that's coming through. And then the other theme, which Evan, you were really talking about, is giving up before you've even started because you're comparing yourself to other people and like where they are, like, oh, I'm not a professional ballerina, so I shouldn't take dance class. Like this idea that when we are living online, we're living in like extremes, like it's either extremely good or extremely bad. And it's like, what if you're not going to go pro? What if you just like to play the piano? You know what I mean? Like we've lost the nuance of just being creative. And part of that is because of the comparison thing, which is actually leading us into the next category of things, which are the emotional benefits, right? Because the mental health benefits of not being on social media, mindlessly scrolling, playing video games. I mean, talk about something that are too numerous to mention, right? Because so many kids today are full of anxiety and depression. And there's, you know, so many studies that say that a lot of it could possibly be linked to screens. So I'd love to get y'all's perspective on that, whether noticing a change like within yourself of like, oh, I can do this thing because I'm not on the screen, or whether you've seen it in your friends. And Evan, if you want to get us started on that, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah. One thing, especially in middle school and even in high school, that people would ask us is, you know, don't you feel like left out because you don't have social media and, you know, because, you know, you're not active on all that. And I would be like, no, because what social media does is you see what other people are doing pretty much without you. So if someone was doing something, if someone was at a hangout or at the beach with friends, we didn't know about it because we didn't see, so we didn't feel left out because we didn't. Yeah. Also, it's like as human beings, we are not omnipresent, so right. It is impossible to be with everyone yes. at once and always doing that next fun thing. So it's like, okay, maybe if I did find out they went to the lake, okay, fine. He has other friends too. Like, it doesn't have to be about me. I never really felt anxious about, not going to a party or not going to the beach or not going to the movie with this group of people because I didn't know about it. And, it wasn't the end all be all. It wasn't the end of the world. And there were always going to be hangouts that Andrew and I were invited to. That was never really the problem. That was never the problem.
Yeah.
Right. Andrew and I were more oftentimes than not invited to things than we weren't invited to things. So I think that not being anxious about missing out was, it was a huge plus, and because we didn't have social media, so we didn't have to deal with that side. But yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think kind of a funny way to think about it, but it's a very true way is, well, yeah, not having social media, we definitely missed out, but what we missed out on? Missing out. It's like, right. Like we didn't know what we didn't know almost. It was like Everyone else knows what everyone else is doing all the time. So of course they feel like they're missing out because they see everything else everyone else is doing that they're not doing mm-hmm. also. And we missed out on that. So right. Like, the feeling they have of not being there was something that we didn't have. So we missed out on missing out, which was honestly a very nice thing.
It's a good point.
Relieved a lot of potential stress. And that was something that a lot of our peers had to deal with and I didn't, which was nice. So mm-hmm. One thing too is that social media is always reminding you the ways that someone else is better than you, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that's you've started getting into working out and so you start following these weight room influencers or all these things on social media and you're like, oh, well, all these like dudes are jacked and I've been working out for 6 months and I still don't have that much, muscle or whatever. That's a minor example of comparison. A lot of it goes with comparing your body or your looks or, your wealth and the amount of money you have compared to someone else, or the vacation someone else is going on. It's all comparison. And, the old adage, comparison is the thief of joy. That's, it's spot on. You're dang right. I mean, that's what makes people so anxious. And so, Evan and I were a lot more confident in who we were because we didn't have social media. We were like, well, I know who I am and this is what I enjoy doing. And, other people's thoughts are somewhat relevant, but these are things I enjoy doing. And I am going to be confident in that and I'm going to enjoy doing them because I enjoy doing them. And it doesn't really matter who else is that much better or that much worse because it's not about, always competing with others and comparing yourselves to others. It's just about, being confident in, kind of the things we do, the things that make you unique, kind of the mm-hmm. being confident in that. So that was something that Evan and I definitely enjoyed. That somewhat tangentially segues into the issue of problem solving. Like, instead of always worrying, spending all of our time and effort, comparing ourselves to others and stressing about the ways we weren't good enough, we would, see certain things that, I want to improve myself in this way. And you come up with a solution instead of, endless doom scrolling cycle that a lot of people get caught up in where it's like, oh, well, I'll kind of like Evan said earlier, I'll never be that good or I'll never be that good looking or I'll never be that strong or all these things, the ultimate doom scroll that everyone gets sucked into on social media. But, instead it's like, it's a type of problem solving where it's like, well, I see the way I am now and I see that I want to be this way. So I'm going to take action. Instead of being kind of paralyzed by the perpetual comparison that tends to happen.
For sure. And it's like, it's not only a problem solving for your own individual self, but then there's also an element of like social problem solving.
Oh,
like
sure.
There's like conflicts between friends. It's like, well, if they're in a fight, I can stay objective because I haven't been caught in, like you're saying, the doom exactly. cycle drama yeah. of what's been happening on social media. So you're able to be kind of have that objective position as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No arguments get fixed over text. Like no. that's impossible. So like even when I had a phone that was, talking text and I could sense that someone had a problem with something and they would text me about it and they'd be like, okay, let's call or let's meet in person and talk this out. Like, and not only does it enable you to kind of solve your problems with other people that way, but you also can kind of be an arbiter of that sort of, you know, conflict resolution mm-hmm. in other people's lives, whether it's your friends or other people, even people just kind of respect that, oh, you like to, you know, address your problems honestly in person. Like, oh, that's actually quite refreshing that I don't have to worry that I'm misinterpreting your text that, you know, has whatever, has this connotation or something to it. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, without having that social media and stuff like that, you learn to deal with problems face to face. You learn to get over that, you know, you learn to have kind of that awkward talk of, hey, maybe we're not seeing eye to eye, but instead of just letting it drag out and have us both hold grudges behind our screens and on social media and whatever, and do whatever social media thing that people freak out about when you don't like someone anymore, right, or something stupid like that. You know, you have that awkward conversation with, hey, I don't like the way you've been doing this or whatever. And then they respond, and then you talk it out. Nothing's ever worked out unless you go face to face and you learn how to get over that, like the awkward feelings toward people, or even, mm-hmm. you know, in a positive connotation, if it's a, hey, I like you, you tell them, hey, I like you. You know what I'm saying? Like you
well, practice. And then not every social interaction is life or death, you right. know, based exactly. on your emotions.
Yeah. Right. And you just learn to deal with people better because, you know, the way that's how people have been dealing with each other for centuries. So yeah. why reinvent the wheel? Why do we have to reinvent how to deal with people when it obviously doesn't work?
Yeah.
So not having social media helped Andrew and I be a lot more personable and be a lot more, you know, just better at just conversing and solving, going along with solving problems. And then hand in hand with that is we had more time for relationships that meant something with family members, with like siblings, grandparents, uncles, the whole nine. We had more time because we weren't investing in a screen. We would invest in them them as a person. And when we were present with them or on the phone call or something, we were there. We were there as people in that relationship, mm-hmm. instead of just you know, having it just as far as friends go, just be a, oh, I follow them on social media, or oh, I'm like a gaming friend with them, so I right. see his avatar, and you know, all I know about him is how good he is at a game, instead of knowing, you know, the whole person. When you are friends with somebody, you see, if you're really close, you see every aspect of them, and mm-hmm. Because, you know, good. People as people, we're multifaceted creatures. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of complexity to us. And as friends and as dealing with people, you kind of have to learn how to, you know, interact with, okay, maybe he's not in such a good mood, so how do I interact with him here? So, mm-hmm. You know, doing that and being able to invest in those relationships and build stronger bonds without screens was a huge benefit. And, you know, I'd like to think that Andrew and I have friends that we formed in middle school and high school that we'll have for the rest of our lives. I mean, obviously, we don't know how often we're going to see them, you know, college and then who knows where. But I'd like to say that we'll keep in touch and that we'll, you know, see each other every once in a while and just pick up right where we left off. And that's because Andrew and I took the time to invest in them as people. And it's not like you don't have to have a special skill set to do that. You just have to have the patience and the time and the willingness. There's no, well, you're extroverted, so you're good right. at doing this with people. That's such a myth. Yep. Anyone can invest in anyone in a good relationship, and the dividends that it pays are numerous.
Great point, Evan.
Yeah, and it's like the connections you have with people are personal. They're not just like digital, and that, you know, that's what makes you want to keep up with someone, because if you only are friends with someone so that they can follow you back, well, what a nice surface level relationship you have there. Like mm-hmm. We're actually going to keep up with people because we care about them and we enjoy knowing them. And yeah. And kind of jumping back real quick to what you said about, to those family relationships, is one thing I observe from some of my peers and just things that I hear is that a lot of times when screen time becomes a huge factor in someone's life, one of the first things to go out the window is their family relationships. Like, like our family, we have dinner as a family every single night. And sometimes that turns into a 2.5 hour conversation about something random or just hearing about someone's day. And that's a big part of our day. And that's something our family benefits from, that I feel like we personally benefit from as well. And that sort of family life is one of the first things that flies straight out the window whenever someone, you know, incorporates a large chunk of screen time into their day because, well, now they really only care about their peers and what everyone's doing on the screen. You mom and dad, your opinions and what you think in my relationship with you really isn't all that important, but thanks for paying for my phone. So it's like, it kind of, that's one of the first things to go out the window. But anyway, that was just a thought good that point. I had while you were making that really good point about relationships, especially with our families. Still kind of on the same idea of emotional benefits, but kind of segueing into a little bit of a different idea is kind of just the another thing that you miss out on by not having screens is you miss out on all of the toxic, violent, and inappropriate mm-hmm. content. It's just, you know, almost inescapable on the internet. Yeah. Like it's just it's everywhere. You can't really escape it. You can't overcome temptation, really. Self-control, especially as a teenager, is pretty much non-existent.
You know,
not real. Non-existent. Exactly. Thank you for the word. But yeah, it's not really a real thing. Like it's, everyone thinks, oh, like my kid, it's like so self-controlled and like, oh, he's so mature. Like he, you know, okay, sure. Yeah. That's a load of garbage. Like, yeah. Like, I don't know. Self-control is one of the hardest things for people to do, even for adults. Like, mm-hmm. It's incredibly difficult. So when you have all of that stuff just being thrown at you on the internet, it's just not a good place to be. And it really hurts your brain. It hurts your emotional health because those are scarring things that you can be exposed to because, they're being presented to you in a way that it is impossible for our little bit of self-control to overcome.
Yeah.
So yeah, that really is genuinely harmful. A bit of a separate idea as well. I just wanted to squeeze that idea That's in good. There. But another thing that you'll kind of find is overarching in a lot of what me and Evan are saying is that it's okay to be different. Like mm-hmm. that's one way that Evan and I honestly made a lot of friends because we were willing to be different and people respect that. And they're like, oh, like I like the way that they treat me. I like the way that they respect me. I like the way that they are willing to be actual friends and not just, you know, screen buddies or whatever. You know, that being different makes you stand out and it also attracts people. Like sometimes people think that being different just makes you a black sheep all the time. But
right.
From my experience, more often than not, it makes you a more attractive person to be around, to, you know, to be friends with and, you know, maybe one day hypothetically to date. It's, you know, being different is a incredibly beneficial thing and it makes you a more interesting person. And it honestly makes you a more valuable person to be around because you're not just another face in a crowd that is interchangeable with everyone else on the internet. So being willing to be different is really cool. And that kind of goes hand in hand with not succumbing to what the culture is throwing at you all the time. When you're on social media, like literally all you're doing is filling your brain with everyone else's ideas about who you should be. Like that is all you're doing on social media. So being free from social media, not being spending all your time there enables you to stand out from the culture, not, you know, succumbing to the same cultural influences that everyone else is, like mm-hmm. making decisions for yourself or, I don't know, asking your parents' advice. That's kind of a cool thing that a lot of people miss out on, but it's very beneficial, you know, staying grounded with your family. Culture tends to have a more harmful impact than beneficial. And so, you know, staying free from those cultural influences by staying off social media altogether is definitely a huge pro to all these things that Evan and I are saying.
Great point.
Yeah. And, you know, going off of, you know, learning to think for yourself, the next two kind of go together. Learning to think for yourself is one of the best things because you can take what other people around you are doing and you can, you know, wrestle, you can think about them and, you know, okay, well, why are they doing this? Okay, well, what do I think about this? And then you can create your own opinion that's not everyone else's. Oftentimes is what, you know, celebrities do nowadays is they realize the grip that they have on people, especially, mm-hmm. you know, Taylor Swift and teenage girls. Sorry, I had to say it, but it's ridiculous. you know, Taylor Swift could say anything and there are thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of teenage girls across the globe that would drop everything they're doing and just follow what she was doing. They weren't thinking for themselves. They were just doing whatever they were told by someone that they, you know, idolize. And it's not bad to look up to people at all. I think it's very important to have mentors and to pick their brains about life in general. Those who are older than you know more than you because they've seen more than you and they've been around longer than you. And so I think it's valuable to pick their brains in that way. But I think that thinking for yourself and thinking why that your mentors think that is important. It helps you grow in, you know, critical thinking is one of those things that's kind of lost nowadays. And not only does, you know, this critical thinking help you on the SAT or whatnot, but it just helps you in life, helps you solve problems, helps you be independent. The best thing is when you're not relying on someone else to, you know, just live life for you. If you can learn to be comfortable in your own skin and, you know, be independent and be confident. Confidence is the biggest thing, and it's what all leaders have and what a lot of followers lack. And so if you're confident in your ability to be who you are, to say what you believe, then man, you're doing it right. And it's not easy, but it takes a while, but learning to be independent and self-reliant and just figure things out for your own and mm-hmm. not have to rely on so many other people that could possibly let you down, man, that's a big benefit. And another benefit was that, you know, because we had this independence, we weren't rejected as much as we would have been, you know, online. People saw this independence. People saw this, this kind of cavalier way that Andrew and I were doing things. And, you know, then they were like, oh wait, that's actually kind of cool. We kind of want to be a part of that because, you know, you guys are pretty real, and it's not that we're amazing people. Like you could take away from this podcast that Andrew and I are just the best people. We're not. We're normal people just like everyone else, but we were just raised in a way to where we were different and we went against the grain, and people, you know, people valued that, and they wanted to be around us because of that difference. So we weren't rejected like we would be, you know, online on social media. Man, you deal with mm-hmm. rejection all the time of, oh, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they put me in this picture? And that's just such a headache for no reason. It's just, it's so silly. And it really does, as silly as it may seem, it really does affect people. And it's terrible. It's really sad. People get all, you know, heck bent on why they weren't, you know, in this one post. And Andrew and I just never dealt with that. If someone didn't want to, you know, take a picture with us, we didn't care. We were like, okay, that's your choice, whatever. Like, Andrew and I are going to do, you know, what we think is right and what, you know, what we're going to do, what we value. And it ended up working out for us. So.
Yeah. And kind of in summary of all of these emotional benefits is it's like not making your social media or your screen in general the central mm-hmm. focal point of your life. It enables you to have like real relationships. It enables you to have more, you know, genuine experiences. The things you do aren't just, you know, from watching someone else do something and copying it, but you're actually experiencing things for yourself. And those are the, and kind of, yeah, thirdly, to think for yourself, like what Evan was talking about. Those things, you know, relationships, experiences, and the sort of independence and not self-reliance, but, you know, critical thinking, those are things that kind of constitute a good emotional health, right? When you're relying on other people for your self-worth and all those things, that's what leads to a lot of the emotional, you know, the emotional difficulties and struggles that a lot of our peers are having to battle. But you know, when you have that firm foundation from your family, and from your, you know, your personal experiences and what you have going for you, as opposed to what everyone else is trying, the mold everyone mm-hmm. else is trying to force you into, that's what gives you a strong emotional health and also just a very fun, more enjoyable life.
So, no, absolutely.
And more enjoyable childhood. So
for sure. And I think, you know, with the emotional category, the mental health benefits, I think more than any of the other categories, we're really seeing that the risk is not worth it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. even if not yep. everyone is affected in the same way by screens, the sheer risk yeah. that happens when they do spend their time on screens just is not worth it at all. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, and y'all talking about how you have felt, but then what you've observed in your friends and kind of the difference there, it's just not worth it.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of like taking a pill that has no benefits, but a ton of side effects.
Yes, exactly. Like a really bad placebo.
You might not get all the side effects, but it's like, you might not get all the side effects that someone else does, but not taking the pill would just remove all the side effects altogether.
Exactly. So why take the pill? You're exactly right. So that was great. Thank you all for those 12 things. So this is our final category, and it is, I'll say probably the biggest one, mostly because like we've been talking about, it's kind of been filtering in just the social aspect of, or the, let's say the quote unquote social aspect of social media and smartphones. You know what I mean? We've been talking about, you know, Andrew, you've said texting not being communication. Evan, you've talked about the importance of like in-person socialization. So I'd love to hear, kind of dive a little deeper into the social benefits of not having the toxic tech. We've kind of been alluding to it, but like getting a little bit more detailed in that. And Evan, do you have something to start us off?
Yeah. One thing that's really common today is that, you know, people say they have social anxiety, and I'm not downplaying, you know, that it's a real thing, but I think that when people say they have social anxiety, they think that they can overcome it by substituting real social interaction with social media and texting and stuff like that. And that just makes it worse because you can't, what's the thing they say? Like 50% of talking is like nonverbal or something.
Oh yeah. It's like 70%, or it's like 80% of communication is nonverbal.
Something like that. Yeah.
And then like 20%, well, that'd be 100. I don't know what the math is, but I know what you're talking about.
Some percentage. Yeah.
There's more communicating than what is being
correct.
Said.
Yes. Thank you, Andrew.
And so if you, rely on just words and, or text and, you know, just other electronic ways of communication, mm-hmm. you're going to misinterpret. It happens. People misinterpret face-to-face conversations. Yeah. People are really going to misinterpret screen and like
words on a screen. Yeah.
Stuff. All mm-hmm. that does, I feel like, is just raise these questions in your head of, well, what do they think about me? Like, do they like me? Do they not like me? Like, what was it that I said? What was it that I did? What did they mean by this? That just creates a whole just bundle of just anxiety that is just so unnecessary. Then where if your only outlet of communication and your major outlet of communication was face to face, man, you would avoid all that. Mm-hmm. You would have such a better understanding of people, and you would learn to kind of get over that anxiety and realize that talking to people is a lot more healthy, and going face to face and sharing experiences, not just sharing words, but sharing experiences and sharing time with one another, all plays into that kind of social aspect that we have as humans. And it just really, what I found is it just really does deplete that social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
If I had been given a phone in middle school, I was already saying hurtful things to people. I was in and out of the principal's office every week. I had a few demerits to my name. And if I was allowed a phone, gosh, I would have texted, you know, 10 times more than what I said, because it's a lot more awkward to say a super mean yes. thing to someone's face than to text it. Because when you text it, you can kind of hide.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with it in that immediate moment. And especially if you're cyberbullying or something like that, then you can really hide behind an alternate personality. You know, it's just bullying just loses its luster when you get in person. And not saying that it doesn't exist, but a huge benefit was that I wasn't able to write all that mean stuff that I said because I was still grown up. I was 13, 14, 15, whatever age. And I thought I was all that. And I thought that I had every right to just be a jerk to everyone. And it's very common in middle school for people to do that. And so just allowing middle schoolers to have phones just creates this culture of comparison and making fun that already exists. And you add a phone and just exacerbates it.
But then it goes home with you.
Yeah, it goes home with you. It stays with you. I mean, it's hard to delete things nowadays. People hang on to stuff. It goes to people you don't want. Mm-hmm. And so it just, it unleashes a whole can of worms, you know, than a normal face-to-face interaction would do. So
it's a really good point.
And for people who are on the receiving end of it, it feels like inescapable. Yeah. Like when they're at school, when they're at home, when they're trying to sleep, but they're still seeing all these comments on their posts or what everyone is saying about them. Like it feels really inescapable. Yeah. So it just is, like you said, Evan, it opens a can of worms, and the worms are really ugly. So really not a good thing. That's kind of the one thing, is that you will miss out on the, you know, cyberbullying type things. And, you know, to be honest, people might still say things about you, but hey, it doesn't hurt as bad when you never hear about it. So I'm sure, Evan, people were saying things about us, but I never heard about it. So never heard me. So like it's one of those things that is, you know, nice to miss out on. One thing that I really enjoyed that was kind of weird and different from my peers in middle school and early high school, but you know, people now are like, oh, that's actually really cool, is being able to talk to adults. Like to be honest, when I was in middle school, and a lot of my friends were, you know, in the middle school stage and just like I was, but they had kind of, you know, fallen into or relied on their technological crutches, their screens as their main modes of communication. They weren't really able to carry on legitimate conversations. And I was, mm-hmm. and that really benefited me. I enjoyed talking to people's parents, like more than I enjoy talking to them sometimes, like don't tell them, but that's something that like I really enjoyed, was talking to people who know how to carry in a conversation, who are actually listening to what you have to say, who aren't always talking just about themselves, mm-hmm. But you know, care about what you want to say and where you care about what they want to say, like being able to carry on real conversations and to do so with adults. Like that was something that was really fun for me. Something I still enjoy doing. It's kind of weird now that I'm an adult. I guess I'm talking to my other fellow adults, but
it's still really, boat, yeah, you know?
It's really fun. Exactly. It's always fun to talk to people who are more mature than you and have more experiences than you. And, you know, to be honest, I think not having those screens enabled me to develop the skills that allowed me to communicate with mm-hmm. them. So that's something I had a lot of fun
that's
doing.
That's really good.
Yeah, talking to the big, mean, scary adults when you're, you know, 13, 14 that no one wants to talk to. That right there just builds social confidence. You're like, hey, I just talked to an adult about, you know, cars for 13 and a half minutes, but who's kind of like, you know what I'm saying? Like that builds social confidence, is like, hey, I can talk, you know, if you have that confidence where, hey, I can make conversation with anybody. It's so lacking in our culture mm-hmm. now, just going through a city or something, you see everyone with, they're on their phones and they have their AirPods in, and it's basically, they're not, you know, trying to be rude about, hey, I don't want to talk to you, but that's kind of the message that comes across. But where if you have that social confidence and you're, you know, you're not afraid of, you know, what people think of you or be afraid of, you know, that confrontation, then that goes a long way. If you're able to talk to anyone, make conversation with anyone, be respectful of anyone, that really does carry over into your adult life. And even into high school, one of my favorite things in high school was my relationships with my teachers. Now that, you know, we're 15, 16, we're starting to mm-hmm. grow up a little bit, not a lot. You know, the teachers start treating you more with, you know, they treat you with more respect and more responsibility than you were in middle school. So that social confidence allowed me to make friends with the teacher that all the girls are scared of. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It was just, it went a long way. And it started from not having a phone in middle school and even elementary school. Andrew and I used to get confidence at McDonald's because we could order for ourselves. And
right.
It was something small, but.
Well, because when you're not buried in your phones, then you see people as people. You exactly. know what I mean? Like if you spend all your time in the virtual world, then a real person feels terrifying. Because you're not used to it. But then the more you spend time in the real world, you're like, oh, my teacher's a human being. They're a person that I can talk to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when, you know, we briefly mentioned earlier how like so much of conversation that happens through text is like do or die, end all be all. Like I got to add 15 exclamation points and a smiley face so they don't think I'm like mad at them. Like, but real world conversation, it's so much more, you know, easygoing. Like when you learn how to have a free flowing conversation with someone you don't know, it's so liberating because it's like, oh, I can express what I'm thinking and I can be nice to this person and I can learn about them and maybe I'll never see them again. But hey, I just made a human connection that, you know, benefits me, benefits them because mm-hmm. we're both like improving our social skills. And like that, those are skills that are personal,
right?
Those personal skills you can't get on a screen because screens aren't people. So that's one thing that is really cool. And yeah, Evan, you nailed it. Being friends with teachers is really fun. I'm not saying that it's like, you know, extremely beneficial and like, oh, I got to, they boosted my grade for this reason, but just, you know, teachers are people too. And when you're friends and build an actual relationship with your teachers, that's a pretty cool thing. It makes learning a lot easier, a lot more fun, a lot more engaging, all those things. So yeah, kind of segueing to a different idea, but still related to school, was kind of the ability that Evan and I had to take on leadership positions within our school. So Evan was elected as the ninth grade class representative when we were freshmen in high school. This year, I was elected as the senior class president, and Evan was the student body president.
Awesome.
So one thing, you know, it sounds like we were kind of running a little bit of a
dictatorship,
family, oligarchy, whatever you want to call it. there were other people in the in student positions, but it's just kind of cool, and it goes to show that, well, you know, people really appreciated that Evan was able to give a compelling speech. It was entertaining and made people want to vote for him, and kind of that idea where people respected, you know, imagine that. Imagine a high school being run by people who don't have smartphones. Mm. Like, people appreciated that. They responded to it, and they were like, hey, I appreciate who you are as a person, and I will vote for you for that reason. So that was one thing that was cool. And that's that leadership, those abilities to lead people. Those are lifelong skills. Like, Evan and I have benefited from being able to learn those things when we're in middle and high school, which is pretty cool. And not saying we're perfect leaders yet. Leadership is one thing that you can always improve in. But, you know, I think it's not too much of a stretch to say we've got a little bit of a head start on a lot of our peers. So that's a cool thing that will definitely pay dividends in our, you know, work lives, you know, and the rest of our lives ahead of us. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, talking about lifelong skills, a lifelong skill is making friends and having a lot of really good friends and surrounding yourself with good people that, you know, you see eye to eye with and that are going to help you. Like, Andrew and I had, since we had so many different pockets of things we did, whether it was music, sports, or, you know, arts or whatever, we had friends from all those, and, you know, we would hang out with them on a pretty consistent basis. And it's just fun just getting, the take on every different kind of person, in the school. Andrew and I were able to participate in, a lot of different things in the school that most people don't get to. And the relationships that we built from those and from having those people over and getting to know them and spending time with them, even though, you know, people would question like, okay, why are you friends with that person? It's like, well, this person mm-hmm. has a lot to offer and is awesome. Yeah. Just not everybody knows it.
Being able to
good.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry to interrupt, but being able to engage with every kind of person, like, Evan and I had friends in every friend group in the school. And like, that's pretty cool that we were able to engage with that many people. Maybe we weren't best friends with them, but we, you know, people respond well when you're able to treat them as a human.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So sorry to
interrupt. No, you're good. Yeah. I was, there's not much else. I mean, it was just, you know, lifelong of having friends and being able to, you know, keep them and, just surround yourself with the right people. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of goes hand in hand with being able to talk to anybody, being able to be friends with anybody. Yeah. Right. That's a really valuable skill, and other people appreciate it too, for sure. So, one thing that, I will geek out real quick on is, one huge, I guess kind of hobby. We mentioned hobbies earlier. Mm-hmm. This just kind of crossed my mind.
Social hobby.
Yeah. It's a super nerdy thing. And it's becoming really social too, is, I'm a huge board game nerd. So when I was in like lower and middle school, I've always loved board games and I love playing them a lot. Settlers of Catan, that's what I wrote my Common App essay for when I was applying to college. So,
I love
kind of a super mega nerd moment, but, yeah, there's tons of other games too, more well-known ones, big chess guy myself, but, yeah, those are things that I've enjoyed doing for a really long time. And, you know, now in high school, a lot of other people are like, hey, these are actually kind of fun too. And, I guess I'll be a nerd with you, Andrew, but, I've enjoyed now a lot of my friends have become, you know, they enjoy playing a board game, and that's something that's really social where, you know, we're enjoying a competitive thing together. We're using our brains on something, and it's really fun. It's a social activity, that I'm able to engage with friends on, and through that is really a lot of fun. So, board games are a, you know, really, really fun, really fun thing for family night, for, you know, board game night with the boys. I don't know, just throwing out ideas, but lots of fun for sure.
Well, one thing you can, you know, learn from board games and playing with people is how to read people and how to, in a game, you can gain an edge of that where it's like, oh, I can tell what cards you have, or, you know, stuff like, or I can tell what move you're about to make. But just the larger skill in general is just reading body language and reading facial cues and stuff. Goes back to that, that holistic side of communication where it's not just the words you're saying, but it's everything else you have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of lost in the tech world. And so when you learn how to read the room, there are some people that, you know, can't read the room and it gets awkward real quick. So when you can learn to read a room and understand what people are going through and, you know, what to say when and, you know, when's a bad time for this and when's a good time for this joke or maybe, you know, whatever else you have to say. You know, it's just, it's important to be able to read the whole social situation instead of just off the words that people are saying. And kind of going with that is, especially when you're thrown into new, you know, circumstances, whether it's a new school, whether it's a new team or whatever, kind of learning, I hate this word, but the vibe of the team, I hate that word, but you know, the feel of, you know, the group,
and, the energy, you know, of the knowing, room, like where everyone's at.
Yeah. The unspoken
subtext,
but still very present dynamics. Right. Yeah.
And knowing, like, you know, who's been there for a while and, you know, kind of where you are. I got a new job this summer working with Charlotte Knights, and there are guys that have been there on the grounds crew for a while that, you know, I had to meet and figure out kind of how it worked. So my ability to, you know, have the social confidence to strike up conversations with my new colleagues and now my friends, you know, and learning to not just be super loud and boisterous like I am in the student section at my job, you know, learning kind of to ease your way into a new setting. And you don't want to be that guy that, you know, comes in and tries to run the joint right off the bat. You know, you want to kind of, you want to respect the social aspect that other people have set in place. And that social confidence and that ability to read body language and read the room and the situation all helps play into that and helps your chances in making those friends and making those good relationships. So yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I know you've benefited from. And yeah, I had a job as well, and people are amazed. I was working for a catering company. People are amazed at how easy it is for me to talk to people, or, you know, crack a joke with some random guy I've never met, but I'm serving him food. So, you know, I'll address him and, you know, be respectful and carry a conversation, things like that. And people are amazed. At work, sometimes people will, you know, if something happens where they're worried that someone will respond negatively, they'll send me over to break the news or whatever. Like, sorry, we're out of butter. So then someone will send me over to tell them that because they don't want to say it themselves, but it's like really not that big of a deal. But that's just kind of
where we are in society.
An example of how dire these social situations are to people these days. But
good point.
Yeah. And kind of a little bit of overlap from some previous sections, but these are definitely social benefits. Being willing to, you know, have actual conversations with people as opposed to strictly texting, whether that's, you know, talking on the phone. A lot of people like FaceTiming. I'm not as big of a FaceTime fan, but I like, you know, talking to people on the phone much more preferable than text. It's also very much a lot more economical with time. You will waste a lot of time just texting back and forth when it could really just be a 5-minute conversation. Exactly. But I enjoy talking to people on the phone. And yeah, solving relationship problems. Relationships are really hard, whether it's yours with other people or, you know, the relationships between your peers. Being able to, you know, be someone who is a, you know, is good at solving relationship issues is it's a truly invaluable skill. Like, conflict will never go away. It's always going to be part of people's lives, whether you're a teenager or whether you're, you know, 85 years old. It's always a part. It's always a dynamic. There's always conflict between people. So if you're someone who has practiced the skill of, you know, resolving conflict and maintaining strong relationships through various circumstances with people, and being someone who maybe can step in and be a peacemaker in a situation, like, that's a very, very valuable skill that plays out in social situations a lot more than you might imagine at first. But yeah, so these are kind of, we've kind of run over a rough outline of 48 benefits that we've thrown into four categories, namely physical, emotional, mental, and social, not necessarily in that order, but we've thrown together quite a hefty list here.
Yeah.
And we haven't even exhausted everything we have.
No, exactly. So there's a lot of, and y'all are such troopers. It is a lot, you know, reliving 48 months of high school with all the things that you've learned. It's a lot, but what I love is I was getting this picture as we were going through all the different benefits and all the different categories. And Evan, you used the word holistic earlier, which I had already been thinking. And then you said it in reference to one small thing. But the overarching picture is that these benefits, it's a holistic picture of what it's like to live life off a screen, right? Like, people want to know individual benefits, like how will my child get better in school? How will they get better at home? How will they get better at sports? This and that and the other. But there's not really, like, when you try to distill it into one benefit, I mean, we've been encountering this, like we're talking about mental health things, but then we're lapsing into social because it's all so interwoven. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's such a good balance. Like, everyone's always trying to find balance on the screens. How do we balance screen use? And the real balance is stay off the screen, and then your life finds the balance. It finds the equilibrium. It finds that holistic opportunity to have a holistic life where all the different facets, physical, mental, emotional, social, are all working in harmony together. And that's really, like, the comprehensive picture that I've gotten by listening to y'all for the last hour, which has been truly tremendous. And I'm so happy that we're able to capture it and share this with people. I do have two more questions or kind of just like thought experiments I wanted to leave our audience with. And it's mainly kind of addressing two myths, right? That we come across a lot. And the first is, people say that kids are sheltered when they are not allowed screens, right? Which seems crazy after listening to y'all for an hour that people would think that. But that's kind of the lie that's been presented, right? That we're sheltering. Well, it's like we're sheltering our kids on the screens, but we're sheltering them off the screens. Like, people just have a mixed idea of this word sheltered. So how would you all answer that now that you've graduated high school, you're moving into college? Do you feel that you were sheltered? Like, do you feel like your lives have been ruined? I mean, I'm being facetious because I kind of know the answer based on having listened to you all, but I just love to get y'all's perspective on the word sheltered. And whether you feel like you've been sheltered or not, and whether that's a good or a bad thing.
One thing is, like, people throw around like, oh, you're sheltered, or like, mom, if you don't give me a screen, I'm going to be sheltered or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that what you want? Like, people throw that around like it's such like a, you know, negative word. But it's really such like a, almost like a toddler argument. Like, it really doesn't make any sense. First of all, as a parent, isn't your job kind of to protect your kids from all the stuff out there? Like, isn't like shelter a good thing? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, isn't that why we have houses? Like, shelter is good. But you know, almost for the sake of word choice, if we don't like that word shelter, then let's just say protect. Yep. Like, a parent's job is to protect their kids. Especially, you know, young years, lower school, middle school. Like, there's almost no more important thing you can do as a parent than to protect your kids, right? Because the bad influences are out there. They're near infinite, and they will find your kids. Your kids will find them if they're not protected. So I think that's one kind of thing to right the ship a little bit, is that everyone has that thing, this idea that being sheltered or being protected is bad. But no, it's not. That's kind of essential for proper childhood. Like, childhood is gone because people aren't protected anymore. But when you protect your kids, you enable them to have a real childhood. So I think that's pretty amazing that, you know, it's gotten that backwards. But yeah, anything you want to add to that, Evan, on the idea of being sheltered?
I mean, you said it super well. One thing I would add is just like, no one can think that it's okay to expose their kids to everything out there in the world. If you walked up and said, oh, your sixth grader hasn't done cocaine, oh my gosh, you shelter your kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's so preposterous. Exactly. No one would ever say that. So by thinking that you're sheltering your kids by not giving them a screen, well, a screen is the first step in getting access to all these vices and,
good,
you know,
point.
Pandora's jar of all this crap that's out there. It's, you know, it's, there's a lot of not good stuff that kids get into that, their parents just have no idea they're into because they hide it behind their phone. Mm. But the easy fix is to just not give them this phone, and then they have to work extremely hard to find that trouble, and they most likely won't. to whereas if they're on a screen, it's easy, it's out there, it's in front of them. Like Andrew said, yeah, it's not, it's going to find them. Your kids are going to, and you know, your kids are going to find it. So, by protecting them from this, it's not a bad thing at all. I don't think any parent should think that, you know, not giving your kid a phone is sheltering them, because it's not exposing them to porn and violence and, you know, all the other crap that's out there. So,
and there's a, it's like, there's a really weird double standard with screens. It's like everything else people think logically about. Well, you don't want your kids to smoke cigarettes when they're nine. You don't want your kid to, you know, have access to inappropriate content when they're nine. Like all of these things people think about logically, and then they get to screens and they're like, oh, here's something that can give my kid access to all of those things.
Totally different.
Yeah, we'll green flag that. It's like there's this weird social thing around that. And I think that's one thing, just because all of this stuff is still so new, everyone just assumes it's okay. But I think one important part of being a parent is thinking critically, because in a lot of ways, culture is becoming more childish and not thinking critically. Like your job as a parent is to think critically about this and say, hey, this thing is treated with an absurd double standard, and I'm going to reject that double standard, and I'm going to choose to raise my kid myself, not have my screen raise my kid, and to protect it. To protect my child from all the things that are out there. So that's probably more than you asked for when it comes to the sheltered idea.
No, that's phenomenal, you know, because we can give that exact answer to parents day in and day out, but hearing it literally from the horse, aka the teenager's mouth, you know, is really powerful, because that's the biggest worry, is that parents have this misguided idea that if they don't give their kids screens, they're somehow ruining them for life. You know what I mean? And and it's just because parents want to be good parents, right? And they're fearful, and but they also don't know what they don't know. So thank you all so much for that answer. That was fantastic. One last question, which is just crazy that we're at this point, because I remember helping your mom edit this book when it was about Adam, and now y'all are about to go to college. So it's just really, there's like this kismet thing that's happening with this being the last question. It's pretty cool. But the question is, many parents worry that if they don't allow screens, whether it's video games, social media, whatever, that when their child leaves to go to college, they're going to binge and go crazy. And your mom wrote the book, Will Your Gamer Survive College, which is literally this exact thing. So from your perspective, do you think that you're just going to lose your minds and just start gaming every day and not go to class and just get social media and start posting? I mean, like, what is your perspective on that now that you are literally about to take that step into college? Do you feel like you're going to binge on screens?
Evan, you want to kick it off or should I?
You got it. You can kick this and I'll
yeah. Okay. One thing I think is interesting to think about, is that because of the way I've been raised, I think that these ideas will always be a part of me. I will always want to be productive. I'll always want to get, you know, physical exercise, have person in-person relationships. Like these are parts of me that like can't be removed. And so I think one thing that, you know, very well could happen, I don't plan on it happening, but it very well could happen, is maybe I decide to, you know, try video games out, and I, who knows, maybe I don't know, get a console, or I probably wouldn't invest that much money, but maybe my roommate brings a console or something like that. And maybe, let's say hypothetically, I spend, you know, 2 days just binging video games. And this is, you know, the great fear that parents use is, oh, your kid will binge, right? Well, I have a lot of confidence in the fact that if I spent 48 hours, all I did was playing video games, I would feel horrible about myself. And I would immediately want to remove that from ever being an option ever again. Like even if that happened, because of the way I've been raised, I would not be okay with myself doing that. So like, I think it's not necessarily it's not necessarily saying that your kid will never binge, but I think it's much more likely the scenario will be that either your kid doesn't want to and they just will never try that out, or they'll try it out and they'll be disgusted with who it makes them because they know what real life is like, and they'll just as quickly, you know, give it up voluntarily. So I think that's a much more likely scenario, just because life is so much more interesting than what is offered on that game.
And
so,
you've already had that foundation set of like what you enjoy, what you like. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, I think it's silly to say that, you know, someone would never try something right. out, but I think it's incredibly realistic to say, oh, well, you know, their eyes are going to be open to what they thought they were missing out on, but really weren't.
Right.
And how much better real life is and what real life has to offer.
Yeah. What about you, Evan?
It's not like there's this massive reset button that you hit once you go to college. The only thing that changes is that not everyone knows who you are, but I feel like there are still, like you said, Andrew, there are parts of you that are going to stay the same, that you're going to want to stay the same
yeah.
while you're in college than while you're in high school. So if you're raised in the way of being productive and getting outside and used to that, yeah, you're going to be disgusted with how video games treat you. So it's not like you become this totally different person and, oh, now all of a sudden all of my interests are, you know, completely different because yeah. I'm in college now. Like that, and because mm-hmm. my parents aren't here, that's not how that works. You're who you are. You're who you are for whatever, 18, 19 years, however old. And there's a lot of that that's just going to stay the same. So I just think it's silly to say that there's just going to be this massive binging that goes on and that mm-hmm. they're just going to go crazy.
It's not like y'all have never seen a screen before. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Whenever,
like,
exactly.
yeah, you're not showing up like, yeah. what is this device? I must yeah. be on it all day. Uh-huh. Like, you've been around screens, and I think yeah. that's a point yeah. if y'all wanted to touch on that, like, people think that screen strong kids, it's like, no, I must not look upon the device, you know? It's like, okay, chill out.
No, yeah.
You know?
Sure. And that yeah, that's not the case at all. Like, Evan and I use computers for school. We, you know, we actually do have television in our house. like, a lot of people think that it's just, you know, complete abandonment of technology wholesale, but it's really just choosing not to, like, mom refers to them as toxic screens. We just don't allow toxic screens in our lives, and we're a lot better for it.
Yeah.
Not all screens are toxic screens. A lot of them are. So we just choose not to use those. You know, we're just choosing not to invite those toxic screens and to control our yeah. lives.
That's phenomenal. Y'all have been absolutely great. You're such troopers. Thank you so much for spending time with me today and going through yeah. this. And I'm proud of y'all, and congrats on graduating from high school and going to college. And I know y'all are super excited about it. I just really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
Yeah,
no problem at all.
Remember, we've got your back, and we are here to help you go through your 48 months of Screen Strong through the high school years. Evan and I did it, and so can you.
So until next time, stand up for your kids, stand out from the crowd, and stay strong.